is Building on the Solid Rock with Pastor Troy Neely of Calvary Chapel's Solid Rock.
Let every family find faith in the Father's love. This is where it begins. This is our cry, this is our song, Jesus the way. We find our life in Him.
God's been trying to get a hold of some of your attention, maybe our attention, concerning things going on in our life. Maybe He's even sent people who notice these things and they bring it up, but we won't hear. Or we'll say, I hear you. Oh, I know. I see that. I'm dealing with it. But you're not dealing with it. You're making excuses for it. You hear. Maybe you even acknowledge that it is wrong, but you just keep making excuses. And you're really more like the big brother, the one who said, I will do it, but you don't do it.
The Jews were given sign after sign that Jesus was the chosen Messiah spoken of in the Old Testament. Yet they refused to believe Him. Today, Pastor Troy warns Christians of being stubborn, closed-minded to God's voice. The Lord wants to speak to you today and reveal His ways. Humbly listen and receive. Now, make sure and stay with us after Pastor Troy's message. I want to share our contact information as well as how you can receive a free copy of this broadcast. Now, here's Pastor Troy with today's message.
We're in Matthew chapter 21, verses 33 through 46. We all like choices. We love choices. I heard a comedian talking about choices and how when it comes to colors, women really like choices. They've got, I don't even know all the colors. Joshua might be able to name them better than me, but the periwinkles and all these other things that are out there, the colors men are like, it's a shade of blue. Men are left with two colors, black and brown. And the comedian said, and for men, that's one choice too many. Because we still can't figure out which pair of shoes goes with the outfit. The black or the brown, honey? So we love choices. We like good choices. Do you want cake or ice cream? Oh, and when you can add your own choice to it, we like that even more. How about both? Can I have both? Choices are great. They give us empowerment. Some choices aren't hard to make. Heaven or hell? Well, I want heaven. I'll make that choice. But there are choices that are hard ones to make. For example, your boss comes to you and says, we're cutting back, we're scaling back. So what you can do is you can take a reduction in pay, a significant reduction in pay and benefits, or you can take a modest severance package and put yourself on the market. At that point, it's a hard decision. Like, oh, man. What's the severance package? What's the market like? We want to count the cost. We got a decision to make, right? We love choices. And God gives a choice. There's a choice we're going to talk about today. And it's a difficult choice. The title is Broken or Crushed? Pick one. Jesus has just been questioned about His authority, what authority He has to do the things and say the things that He's been saying. He asks a question to them in response about John the Baptist. Who was his baptism from? Heaven or from men? They didn't want to answer that question for fear of the people, and they didn't want to say the right answer. So ultimately, Jesus doesn't answer them, their question on authority. But He tells them a parable that fits the occasion, a parable of two sons. They were both asked to work in the field. One said no, but then went and worked in the field. The other said, okay, I'll work in the field, but did not. And he asked, who was the faithful one? The one who talked the talk or the one who walked the walk was the question. They said, oh, well, obviously the one who went in and did it, the one who walked the walk. Jesus explained that the religious leaders, the tax collectors, and the harlots would actually get into heaven before them. Because the tax collectors and the sinners, and the harlots, when John the Baptist came preaching, they actually listened and followed. They repented. They did something. They just didn't hear and say, "Oh yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, I'm a Christian." They did something. They allowed it to change them. And he told them, "You heard. You saw that going on, and you didn't change. You didn't repent." And so they, who you think are the lowly, they will be in heaven before you will get to heaven. And now Jesus tells another parable, which gives light to what's going on right now as they're rejecting him. And he says in verse 33, "Hear another parable. There was a certain landowner who planted a vineyard and set a hedge around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a tower. And he leased it to vine dressers and went into a far country." Now, so far in this parable, there's nothing real mystical to the average Jewish listener. This would have been, okay, I'm tracking with you, no problem. Because they were either farmers or they were around farming. They knew exactly what you had to do to build a vineyard in the area. And so they're not putting little mystical things in this. They say, okay, this makes sense to me. First, because the hills are stony, rocks everywhere in Israel, you would have to remove all of the rocks. You'd have to clear the land. You'd have to clear it. And then you'd build a retaining wall, because in Israel, it's very, very hilly. So not a lot of real level pieces of ground. And so what you would do is you'd build a retaining wall. A retaining wall is just a wall that comes up so that you can fill it in and you can have a level piece of land. So there's no erosion from the soil and all of that. So you'd have to do all of that. Clearing, retaining wall. And then you would build a wine press. A wine press was often a big stone, or sometimes built into the stone, into the ground, where you would build trenches, a big holding place, a holding tank, a place to put all of the grapes and crush them with tracks so that the wine, you could lift this little lever and the wine would flow, the liquid would flow into this preserving area so that you could collect the wine and use it. So that's part of a vineyard. You'd want to have one of those, otherwise you just kind of grow the grapes and you miss some of the opportunity for profit. So they would do that. Finally, you'd build a watchtower in order to keep an eye out. You'd want to be able to go up high and look to see if anyone is coming to threaten, or if some may be hiding out in your fields trying to steal from you. So those were common things. You'd also want to build a cistern, which is like we would call it maybe a well. You dig it out because it's concrete there. It's a hard aquifer, you know, your own little self-contained aquifer right there. And so they would build one of those in order to collect rainwater for drinking, because it would be closer to the vineyard. It would be useful for the workers to drink from. And if they didn't receive the rains necessary in the rainy seasons, then they would be able to use that water to continue to irrigate and put water on their vineyards. So no big deal, no mystery right now. They're tracking with him. And it says, and he leased it to vineyards or vine dressers. That was not uncommon either. The owner would just invest in it. Kind of like what we would do today, we would call renting properties. I buy it, I fix it up, and then I make the income from that. Well, they would buy the property, they would own the property, they would plant, and they would have someone work it. Of course, they'd be able to eat from some of the produce, but they were required to produce a certain amount. They were left in charge, often able to live on that property. So they would lease it, and then he would go away to his own home. In this case, as he goes to a faraway land. Verse 34. Now when vintage time drew near, he sent his servants to the vine dressers that they might receive its fruit. And the vine dressers took his servants, beat one, killed one, stoned another. It's as if these guys have said, "This is my property. This is my stuff. Who are you? I don't want to give you anything." So they think it's theirs now. They're treating it that way anyway. They're treating the owner's servants with contempt. Verse 36, "Again, he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did likewise to them." Verse 37, "Then last of all, he sent his son to them, saying, 'They will respect my son.' But when the vine dressers saw the son, they said among themselves, 'This is the heir. Come, let us kill him and seize his inheritance.' So they took him and cast him out of the vineyard and killed him." The vine dressers were supposed to tend to the vineyard and give it every opportunity to produce fruit in its season, be responsible for that fruit, and then give that fruit back to the owner as required. So he sends servants, and they take offense at his servants, beating one, killing one, stoning them, did the same to others who were sent. And then he sends his son. "Surely they will receive my son. Surely they will honor him. If they have any respect for me at all, they will respect my son." Obviously, showing no respect for the son shows a lack of respect for the owner too, right? And you probably know where all this is going. If you know the scriptures, if you know anything about the son and the owner and the vineyard owner, the father. But they kill the son too in this parable. So Jesus says, he asks them a question. "Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those vine dressers?" And they said to him, "He will destroy those wicked men miserably and lease his vineyard to other vine dressers who render to him the fruits in their seasons." And of course, that's exactly what would happen. You know, back then, you didn't outgrow getting spanked. They would still, you know, when they kicked you out, they would kick you out. You know, there was still some hands-on applied to discipline back then. Even you didn't outgrow mama spankings. You didn't outgrow, you know, the fact that the boss could stop that, you know. So they stayed in order. But whenever you destroy someone's property, you try to seize or take someone's property, especially if you try to kill their own son, beat their servants for claiming what is rightly theirs, you're a criminal. And they have a right to push the full extent of the law upon you. And the religious leaders understand this. Their problem right now is they're answering so boldly. You know, "Kill those people. You'll get them." Like, yeah, but that's you. They don't get it. It sounds a lot like something they should have understood. They should have made a connection. In fact, we're going to find out later they get it. They start to get it. But they're not connecting it yet. In Isaiah chapter 5, let me read it to you. God said, he gives this illustration and gives us who this illustration is about. "Now let me sing to my well-beloved a song, my beloved, regarding his vineyard. My well-beloved has a vineyard on a very fruitful hill. He dug it up and cleared out its stones." The clearing out of the stones was a picture of the fact that God would have Israel clear out the Canaanites, clearing out the land so that his people, we'll see that in just a moment, could occupy the land, "and planted it with choicest vine. He built a tower in its midst," something to watch and to see. "He also made a wine press in it, so he expected it to bring forth good grapes, but it brought forth wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, please, between me and my vineyard. What more could have been done to my vineyard that I have not done to it or done in it? Why then, when I expected it to bring forth good grapes, did it bring forth wild grapes? And now, please, let me tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away its hedge, and it shall be burned, and break down its wall, and it shall be trampled down. I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned or dug, but there shall come up briars and thorns. I will also command the clouds, and that they rain no rain on it." And listen to this. "For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel." Knowing their scriptures so well, they should have caught this analogy. They should have understood this. But they're not listening. They're not listening to what God has been speaking to their nation all along, to them all along. They are truly like that brother who, yeah, I'll do it. All word. I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. I'm a follower. Well, why aren't you doing what you're supposed to do then? Why aren't you following the Lord? Why weren't you prepared for his coming? If you were a real believer, if you really believe these scriptures that you say you attest to, the religious leaders totally missed the Lord, totally rejected the Lord because they were this vineyard. The religious leaders were supposed to help oversee the vineyard. So we don't have to guess what the vineyard represents. It's already been laid out by God. It represents the nation of Israel. But who are the vine dressers? The vine dressers, they were the leaders of Israel, entrusted with the responsibility of leading and tending to the nation. Now, in the Old Testament, it was the kings. The kings, the prophets were in that group, helping be responsible. In the New Testament, it was the political and religious leaders, the Pharisees, Sadducees, the scribes, those who had some governing authority, some governing control over the people. They were supposed to point the people to the Lord, lead them in ways of righteousness. But what they did was they shunned God, really. And instead, they took this belt called the law and spanked everyone with it. So it's ours. We want this. The prophets kept telling them in the Old Testament, change your ways, get your eyes back on the Lord. But they wouldn't listen. The kings wouldn't listen. The kings turned their backs. They thought, no, we're okay. We're God's people. God would not allow that to happen to us. The prophets are saying, God is telling me that it is going to happen to you. But they just wouldn't believe. You know, sadly, God's been trying to get a hold of some of your attention, maybe our attention, concerning things going on in our life. Maybe he's even sent people who notice these things and they bring it up, but we won't hear. Or we say, I hear you. Oh, I know. I see that. I'm dealing with it. But you're not dealing with it. You're making excuses for it. You hear. Maybe you even acknowledge that it is wrong, but you just keep making excuses. And you're really more like the big brother, the one who said, I will do it, but you don't do it. Shouldn't we be more like the one who, even though he couldn't say it and commit with his voice that I'll do it, still strives to turn and do it, repents and says, man, I need to do this, and then does it? So the vine dressers were the religious leaders, owning the people, telling the people what to do, but not doing the things that they themselves should do. And what about the servants? Who were they? Well, they were the prophets of God, sent until finally he sends his son, who just happens to be standing before them right now. And he hasn't been beaten and killed yet, but we're not very far away from that now. And the prophets were seized and beaten and abused and mistreated and hated and all of that. Because the kings, the people, many didn't want to hear what they had to say. Sometimes, and I've told my wife this, sometimes I know I'm called to be a pastor. But sometimes I feel more like, don't confuse me here, I'm not claiming to be a prophet. By the way I speak, and how direct I can be, and kind of matter of fact, I feel more like a prophet must have felt. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say it that way. I just want everybody to like me. But it's like I can't live with that. It's not how God made me. And so I've been known to say some difficult things. I pray for a couple of things for myself, just being honest with you. I pray the Lord will continue to pour his compassion in my heart because it gets, I'm sure, just like maybe the prophets felt, discouraging. Nobody listens. Nobody starts changing their ways. And because of that, matter of fact, with a heart of love can turn into matter of fact, take it or leave it, and I don't care anymore. We never want to get to that place, because that's not the heart of the Lord. The heart of the Lord's broken. The heart of the Lord is, I didn't come to judge, I came to seek and to save that which was lost. And so we cast our pearls. We cast them, we continue to cast them. But we only cast them on a personal level. You don't keep casting them when someone is not going to respond. You cast, they don't receive, they don't respond. Instead of getting bitter, you move on. You find other ground to begin to cast into, because it's the Word of God and they need it. So the vine dressers were the Old Testament kings and the New Testament political religious leaders. The servants were the prophets of God until he sent his only son, who just happens to be standing before them. Later on in Matthew chapter 24, verse 37, Jesus will say this, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing." Has nothing to do with you were not able. The word is willing. It was not in your will. It went against your will, and you were not willing. Jesus also mentions a hedge around the vineyard. Many of the commentators I read said that this could reference to the law, that hedge of protection that set them apart from everyone else. That was a protection for them when other nations were dying of disease and contamination and things were spreading. In Israel, they were almost self-contained. They were able to survive. They had clean habits that caused them to endure those kinds of things. And so they refer to it as law. In fact, the rabbis used to refer to the law of Moses as a hedge, which protected them and set them apart as his own special people. So the picture's there. Jesus is giving them an illustration. They love stories. They're able to relate the Old Testament scriptures. They've always called themselves a vineyard. They've always called him a rock, which we'll talk about in a moment. But they just don't seem to be getting it yet. And you can imagine Jesus is kind of telling them, what's he going to do to those people? They're going to destroy them. You know, yeah. So he's getting a little more obvious with them now. He says, verse 42, Jesus said to them, have you never read in the scriptures? The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. He quotes Psalm 118, chapters 22 and 23. Throughout the Old Testament, the Lord was called their rock, a stone, the rock. You are the rock of my salvation. There is no rock like our God. In prophecy, there was a prophecy that was understood to be a messianic prophecy in Isaiah. It said, "Behold, I lay in Zion a stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation." They understood that one day there would be one who comes who would right everything, level everything, put everything into perspective, would be a sure foundation for his people. They were waiting, and they knew that it was the Messiah that this was speaking of. So Jesus reminds them of this prophetic psalm concerning the stone.
Pastor Troy will pick up where he left off next time you join us for another study through the Gospel of Matthew, right here, on Building on the Solid Rock. If you live in the San Antonio, Texas area, we want to invite you to join us for worship. The messages that you hear on Building on the Solid Rock are produced from worship services at Calvary Chapel Solid Rock. Maybe the teaching you heard is exactly what you're looking for in a church. Then please join us. You can find our service times for Sunday morning worship and our midweek Bible study at our website. That's buildingonthesolidrock.com. Again, for more information about our ministry, including service times and driving directions, log on to our website at buildingonthesolidrock.com. That's buildingonthesolidrock.com. There, you will be able to listen to or download any of our messages in their entirety, as well as get to know us better. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We want to say thank you for tuning in, and may God richly bless you.
Let the light of Christ shine as we grow in Him. Come have your way in us. Come have